Put those four fingers up. Fourth and final hour. Darren, Donick, and Chase here on this Wednesday afternoon. Darren McFarland, Willie Donick, Chase McCabe with you. Let's head to Omaha. Omaha, where Peyton Manning was, by the way. Speaking of that, yesterday during the Vols game, he was in Omaha at the College World Series. But tonight, it'll be Vanderbilt and Stanford. All eyes on that one because the loser goes home. And hopefully it will not be Vanderbilt. It'll be a team in the Pac-12. And now joining us, Andrew Allegretta, who is on the line with us. He'll be doing play-by-play next year for Vanderbilt baseball. I think he's doing the color with Kevin. We had Kevin on last week. Big announcement. Both of you guys put it out there on social media. So let me start off by telling you, Andrew, congratulations on the Vanderbilt gig.
Oh, thank you very much. I appreciate it. You know, I've kind of said the same stuff for about a week at this point, but I'm truly grateful to be here for a lot of different reasons. But first and foremost, that's the first thing I get to do is fly to Omaha and work the College World Series. That's not so bad.
Yeah, and hopefully this stay will continue past tonight.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was a crazy, crazy game on Monday night where Jack Leiter has one mistake. It was just one pitch in the fifth inning, and that's it, after striking out 15 and still not good enough. And Vanderbilt gets shut out for the first time the entire season, and it couldn't come on a bigger stage because we all have seen the stats, Andrew, when you start off 2-0. And 25 out of the last 30 national champs have started off 2-0. And what it means trying to now fight out of the loser's bracket. But how do you think this Vanderbilt team will put that behind them and try to get going back in the right direction tonight against Stanford?
Well, I'm sure it starts with the guy at the top, right? I mean, if there's anybody that's as good at this in terms of turning the page, it's Tim Corbett and Hayes Crew. I mean, they've been able to do this consistently throughout the years. And I recognize that I'm sort of jumping in as the car is speeding along here, but, you know, watching from afar, the ability for Vanderbilt over the years to move past and progress these sort of things is remarkable, and it's sort of one of a kind. So I would expect nothing other than just a first-class performance from these guys. They've got to get the bats going, and they understand that, but, you know, I think it's a little bit interesting to sit back and go, oh, the bats are, oh, the poor bats. This is still a Vanderbilt team that finished first in the SEC in batting average, so you're not going to keep these guys down all that long.
No doubt about it. Has Corbs tipped his hand on who's going to be on the bump tonight?
If he has, I promise you I'm not the person that knows. I don't know. I mean, you would figure it's either Little or Riley, right? I mean,
right.
It's probably going to be one of those two guys. Which one, I'm not sure. And to be quite frank, I've got no earthly idea to even venture a guess.
Little is still 17 years old, is he not?
I believe he is. That's my understanding. If he's turned 18, it happened. If he's turned 18, it's happened like within the past few weeks.
Could you imagine? I mean, when I was 17, to be put, if he indeed is the starter tonight on this stage at 17, man, I would have peed down my leg before first pitch, without a doubt. I would have never been prepared for a spot like that. But obviously, he has stepped up big. He did it, you know, on the journey here to Omaha. But what do you think is the biggest challenge Vanderbilt is facing tonight against this Cardinal team?
First off, I'm laughing at the notion of the things that I was doing when I was 17 and how just the juxtaposition between that and potentially throwing an Omaha is laughable. It's just absolutely and utterly laughable. In terms of tonight, you know, things that you could circle and for fans to pay attention to, it's the fact that they've been able to pop teams for huge innings, and they kind of demoralize you. Against Arizona, they had a 7-run inning. Against Texas Tech, in a really surprising regional, because Texas Tech is a good team in Lubbock under like a 1,000-degree heat. Stanford had 2 4-run innings and a 5th-run inning in those two games. And then the week prior in the regional against UC Irvine, they had 2 7-run innings. So whatever it is, proverbial baseball sort of stuff, cliche baseball sort of stuff, but if you stay away from the crooked number tonight, I think Vanderbilt's probably in good shape, but that is what Stanford has done over the past 2 weeks, is they've crushed team spirits with a huge inning.
We're talking to Andrew Allegretta. He'll be joining our man Kevin Ingram in the broadcast booth tonight. And Andrew, I got a chance to hear you guys for a few innings. We were up at our tournament in Indiana, and I have to admit, I did try to get the video feed on my phone to watch ESPN, but in Kokomo, Indiana, that wasn't coming in. So you guys on the app coming in loud and clear. So I felt like I was at the game anyway. It was awesome. And so, Andrew, I don't know if you'd been to Omaha before, but it sounded great just to have a great baseball broadcast with that kind of crowd behind you. You know, as an announcer, when you have a great crowd behind you, you become a much better announcer. So what was it like to on your first Vanderbilt broadcast?
I mean, it's been absolutely the best. We get 20,000 people for every game that I'm going to do, right? Like, that's how that works from here on out. I get 20,000 folks for every single thing that I do. No, I mean, like, this environment has been good for the soul, I think. And this whole week has been good for everybody's soul. I was talking with Ryan McGee of ESPN up in the press box, and one of the things that he was telling me, because he always goes out and gets these great little anecdotes about the fans and the environment, and he's just such a really good reporter in that regard. He said everybody's happy. It doesn't matter what people have run into. Like, they're doing mobile ticketing in Omaha for the first time ever. And there's been a bunch of glitches. So, like, if you've watched the television broadcast and people are slow getting in the building, it might just because, one, they're turning the stadium over from game one to game two, and two, because it's mobile ticketing and there's just been some technology glitches. Nobody cares. You know what? Your ice cream melts in 100-degree heat. Nobody cares. We're just happy to be here watching baseball around folks just like us that love watching college baseball. Just the overall mood of this place, it's been heartwarming, to put it bluntly.
Andrew, you come to this job. You spent some time at Tulane, and it's interesting. At Tulane, they had a really good baseball season this past year, and Trent Jewett, who was under Tim Corbin for a long time, is the head coach of that program. So I'm guessing from afar you had a pretty decent backdrop on the way Tim Corbin runs the program. So you could, as you said, you know, you're sort of catching the moving train here. You're jumping in on broadcast after the whole season's gone by.
It's been funny for me, guys, quite candidly, because, you know, I'd watch Coach Jewett do his thing down at Tulane. I'd be like, oh, that's kind of unique. They do senior day spread out through the middle of innings. I don't think I've seen anybody else kind of do that before. Or, you know, the guys are going to wear certain things on certain times. That's kind of unique. And then I get here and I go, oh, no. That's just, all of that is Corbinism. So I've learned really fast that Coach Stewart down there at Tulane has embodied and modeled himself off of someone that he considers to be the biggest, if not, you know, one of, if not the biggest mentors in his entire life. So to kind of get a test run these past couple of years at the way Coach Corbin wants to run his program through Coach Jewett down at Tulane has been a nice soft landing, I suppose.
When we watched the game the other night, the television, as you can imagine, they were very fixated on Al Leiter. Almost, it seemed like, after every pitch, it was like, okay, give the guy a break, let the guy watch the game, you know, without having to see his reaction on every pitch. But what did you see from where you guys were sitting, Andrew, about the makeup of the crowd? It's such a unique atmosphere in that you've got your cross-section of Vanderbilt fans that make the trip, the cross-section of fans from the other team that are there, and then there's this mix of people just scattered about. But when you have a guy like Jack Leiter and the name and all the backdrop, I just wonder how many people were sort of in his corner watching that game.
You know, that's a good question. I'll say this. Maybe the most surprising fan base, especially if you're in the SEC in terms of how well they travel, is NC State. They're so overlooked in the research triangle by Duke and North Carolina. The Tar Heels run that state. Duke is the big brand, and poor NC State just gets absolutely dumped on consistently, and they're kind of a chip-on-the-shoulder fan base. And the reason I bring that up is, you know, I think a lot of people would have been in Jack Leiter's corner throughout the course of that game with the way that he was throwing. The problem is, NC State fans will load up the wagons if it at all resembles drinking or winning, and they're doing those things at the moment. So I don't know that it was this overly compelled crowd just for Jack, simply because of the opponent.
We're talking to Andrew Allegretta, who is the Vanderbilt broadcaster, one of the new voices of the Commodores. And as we obviously, all the focus is on baseball, but you're entering a time here at Vanderbilt, Andrew, where there seems to be a more hope and optimism than there really has been in a long time due to leadership that's involved, whether it's Candace Lee in the athletic department or Chancellor Dearmeyer. How exciting is it for you to go into the football season with a new head coach in Clark Lee and knowing that things are on the horizon that are going to help make football and athletics even better?
Yeah, another one of the reasons certainly that I feel fortunate to be in the position that I am, and I don't take it for granted. Certainly $200 million in the bank and driving for $300 million with the leadership of Dr. Lee and Chancellor Dearmeyer. It's a nice moment to jump on the train, and certainly to have the baseball program sitting there doing what it's doing is, you know, it sort of feels like stars aligned, guys. And if you don't know this, part of the reason why I'm so overjoyed and passionate to be here is like, yes, this is a professional opportunity to me that I've worked for, you know, not forever in a day, and I've been very lucky in my career, but, you know, long enough. But at the same time, my wife is from the region. We've got a one-year-old son, so there's this synergy between what Vanderbilt has going with their leadership at the moment, the professional opportunity that this is, and the family opportunity that this is. So, yeah, you know, it checks a lot of boxes, and again, I'm just kind of appreciative at the moment more than anything.
Is it kind of fun to know that you can kind of grow along with, you know, the football program specifically because Coach Lee just taking over, but having that being able to ride that of, hey, we're kind of starting at the bottom with a new program and working our way up?
Yeah, I sure hope so. You know, the comparison that my brain would go to just because of my own background is there's a gentleman by the name of Bill Ross who's been a mentor of mine. He works for ESPN now, but he was 27 years at Virginia Tech, and I started my career at Virginia Tech as well. And he jumped on the Virginia Tech bandwagon the year that Frank Beamer got there. And he rode that from football independence and football total irrelevancy to Michael Vick and the national championship and the Big East and the ACC. You know, Vanderbilt certainly has the advantage of already being in the SEC. But, you know, if I can do anything and be along for the ride in the same way that Bill was, I would consider that one heck of a parallel with someone that meant so much to me and Bill.
Well, it's awesome to get to at least meet you over the phone, get to talk to you. We hope meet you in person very soon because your games will be as a part of our radio cluster on Classic Hits 93.3. So good to talk to you. We'll do it again very soon.
Yeah, by all means. Hopefully we're here for at least another week. Fingers crossed here tonight against the Cardinals.
Absolutely. He is Andrew Allegretta. He is a part of the baseball broadcast, but joining Vanderbilt as their football play-by-play man as well, and appreciate him taking the time to join us. We'll have much more coming here on Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Don't forget to go to thegamenashville.com to check out Nashville's best deals. The deals that are happening right now, $50 Bad Axe throwing Nashville gift card for only $25. Buy one, get one free. Beach Bend Park and Splash Lagoon. $20 Grain and Berry gift card for $10. Get yours right now while supplies last. And all you have to do is go to thegamenashville.com. Back here on Darren, Donick, and Chase here on this gorgeous Wednesday afternoon. Pretty interesting tweet there from Nicole Auerbach concerning NIL, something we've been talking about. The Supreme Court ruling, we talked to Dan Wolkin yesterday on that, and what it means for student-athletes moving forward. It looks like Mark Emmert, fresh off his contract extension, which is good for him. I mean, he's really, really earned it. Mark Emmert has been fantastic as the NCAA president. Evidently, he has sent out a memo to administrators in all three divisions, 1, 2, and 3, telling them what, guys? What is he telling them? What is he asking them to do?
Well, the memo
was to give them some guidance.
He's trying, and there's a lot. There's a lot in here, and it's very wordy, and it's still clinging to, we still have some authority here, but it does look like a concession that starting July 1st, the NIL part, the name, image, and likeness facet of this, will be regardless of what state you're in. Because remember, that this is something we talked about from the very beginning. I think it was California that was the first state to say, hey, we're saying by law you can make name, you can make money off your name. And we immediately said, listen, the NCAA and all of the schools outside of California are not going to let the California schools just have the only ability to do this. It's got to be uniform across to be equal for everybody. And it looks like Mark Emmert's memo today is like that. So regardless of the state that you're enrolled, you can start making money off your name July 1st. That's how I'm reading it.
That's what it looks like.
Yeah. Oh, it's amazing what happens when you get forced into a corner and you can't do anything about it.
Well, and the memo has got a lot of, well, they, you know, we lost some of this, but we still hang on to this. There was a little bit of that in there. And I think Dan Walken kind of agreed with it. You know, he had interpreted it that way, but the name, image and likeness, I can't even say it. Let me just say NIL so I don't have to get all tongue tied, but, it looks like we've reached this day, right? People for decades have been saying this, like Johnny Manziel on the autograph signing. It's game on. AJ Green and selling your jerseys. Game on.
People have been suspended for those things before. I got three words for you. NCAA football 21. Let's go.
Okay.
Let's go.
How will that work, though? I'll be curious. I mean, that's gaming. We're talking about huge. I mean, I think what's interesting is I've learned this with having a 9-year-old at home. There's so many ways out there to make money. I mean, I've said it on this show before, right? Luckily he's kind of moved on past. He still watches a lot of YouTube, but he's moved on past the families that sit around and, you know, make Play-Doh. And it's like, what are we doing? You're sitting here watching a family you don't know make Play-Doh and then, you know, build something with it. And what you find out is, these people, that's what they do for a living.
Yeah, they're influencers.
They're right. They make money off it. So there's so many ways on social media, like you said, be an influencer or whatever, where you can get paid to do, you know, whatever, these things that we're talking about. And right now, there are video game influencers. My son watches people play video games. I'm like, what are you doing? Like, we obviously didn't have that when we were growing up, but these people make money off of that, and there are kids just like my own sitting there watching this stuff. And so they have the ability, just because they are an athlete, to make money off social media, right? Whether it's Instagram or what have you. There's so many platforms now, and so it's not just your traditional, hey, come to the card shop and sign autographs, right? And, you know, we'll charge.
There's probably going to be some of that, right?
There could be, but I'm saying that is what we think of as traditional, right? Like, show up to Kroger in Murfreesboro, and the Blue Raiders will be there signing autographs, and you'll pay $10 for an autograph, and five will go to the whoever's setting it up, and five will go to the athletes, or however that would work. But there's more ways now for that. Who was the skier at Colorado?
Jeremy Bloom.
Yeah. I knew it was Jeremy.
Jay Billis used to bring him up all the time.
I was going to say Fowler, and I'm like, I know it wasn't Jeremy Fowler. And remember, he got denied.
Yeah.
They would not allow him to
play football.
They wouldn't let him play football. It was so ridiculous.
Because he was making money in an Olympic sport.
Yes.
So that was a really interesting case, and he was used as a big example of what's wrong with the system.
But those days seem like they're about to be gone.
We're going to go into a new era where what is Jay Billis going to do with himself now?
The video game is going to be
soapbox anymore.
The video game is going to be interesting because obviously, like with pro sports, the PA, you know, pretty much represents to be on the game. This is something like if you play Madden, Bill Belichick is not on the game. The reason that he is not on the game is because he is not in the coaches association. And they are who negotiates all of that with EA Sports, that gives them the right to scan the face of the coach, use the coach, all those things. Same goes for the players. The Players Association negotiates the rights, and so it's all like a blanket deal. This is obviously going to be different because, and I know we've touched on this, I mean, there's going to have to be probably a union or something to that effect. Because you're not, I don't know if EA is going to go around and negotiate with each individual player, like,
can I put you in the game?
Well, did Northwestern try to do that?
There has been a movement to try to start that. And now I would imagine those guys, that they should have the, you know, greased wheels or whatever. I mean, there should be momentum to get that, right? Because you're right, Chase. I think it would be much easier to have sort of a collective group that, hey, you know, as part of our group, we're giving our rights to EA Sports, and here's what you're going to get. I think about it like my experience. You know, I would not have made a dime off of my own name as an athlete, but if let's just take Vanderbilt basketball in the early 90s, that was a pretty high profile team in this city at the time, right? Because we didn't have Major League Sports at the time. It was in the spotlight, and you know, whether the team was good or, you know, or decent or great, which we had sort of all three in my 4 years there, maybe there would have been opportunities for our team as a group, right? Even the lowly players like me to have some attention, right? So there's different facets of it, right? The guys at the top, like you said, at the start, there's going to be a lot of opportunities immediately on July 1st, even if it's as an old school, like I think about Maurice Claret and how much he could have avoided just making money off of his name back then.
Ohio State tattoos.
Yeah.
The tattoos.
Just think about how ridiculous, like how laughable.
Does Jim Tressel still have a job?
Jim Tressel's career would have been different. He might still be the coach.
He's got to be going, really?
Right?
Like, you did all this over tattoos and now we're just, now we can do whatever?
Sure.
Wild, wild west.
But, like, even
but there's different tiers, right? There's the stars. This is immediately going to impact them. But I think schools are going to probably look at it and say, okay, how can we help our whole team and make that be a benefit to where I can keep stacking my team with good players because this is a good incentive. This is just another reason to come here is even if you're not the superstar, there's going to be opportunities in the NIL department to make a little extra cash.
Well, but that's where I think the video game comes in. Like the basketball game, you were what? You were number 21, right?
Right.
Right. So
I'm in there. I'm in the video game.
Yeah.
My name's not in there, but my number and my stats are in there.
Right.
I know and my stats. They're not great, but I'm in there.
And there's a tall, lanky white guy that kind of looks like you. You know,
has
hair at the time. But
that's
now,
at the time.
But now, no matter what your role is on the team, you have the opportunity to go, you know, EA. Because here's the thing about video games, and especially nowadays, everybody wants it to be as accurate as possible.
No
so
doubt.
Even the last guy on the roster on Vanderbilt's basketball team, you still want that guy on the game because he's on the roster. You go pull up the roster, you match it to what's on your screen, you want it to be the same. So that guy gets a piece. So if this is – when Willie was there, you know, Willie, I don't know how big that piece is, but Willie gets a check from EA based on the sales of the game because he's in the game. I mean, that's going to be big for the players that, you know, aren't the household names. It's just being able to get something out of that. But it's how do you get to that point? How do you negotiate it all? Because clearly, you know, there's – and they're not going to scan, like, everybody, but how it works is – you know, you go either they come to you or you go to a studio and they scan your face and that's how they put it in the game.
Right. Here's another thing that I experienced that is somewhat similar. Baseball cards. They have to get the permission. So how did the baseball card companies do it? Well, what they did, they didn't go to the players union on the major league level because that would have been a pretty big negotiation, right? So what they would do to circumvent that, they would go to you in the minor leagues, and they would get you to sign your rights away when you were in the low minors. And I signed it. They give you $5. They give you a check for $5.
That's it?
And in exchange for that, they have the right to put your baseball cards out there. And so we've had fun at my expense with, you know, my few low minor league baseball cards that are still out there somewhere. I don't know how many there are. I've got a few in frames just for collectibles, but they get you cheap before you make it, right? That was their strategy. But they would have to do that, right? They couldn't just deal with one. There's no union in the minor leagues. So they had to go from team to team, city to city, and little by little get all the new minor leaguers each year that were drafted. And then, of course, there's probably the odd guy that said, no, I'm not going to give you my rights. I'm going to negotiate for those once I make it. But at that point in your life, you're like, forget it. You want to make a baseball card of me? Great. Give me the $5.
Hope you didn't spend it all in one place.
Well, they were like, hey, you might want to frame this. You know, this would be a great collectible. I cashed the check. I take the $5.
Heck yeah. What's the point of even giving five? I don't even understand.
I think it's just to they wanted to give you a token for these. Right, because think about how much cards. It's an investment for them, right? Because you know, one of every 10 people are even going to make the major leagues at that point, and then of those people that make it, very few are going to have their cards be worth anything. But for the ones that are, that's the windfall for the card company, right?
Right. And so what's in it for you? Like, let's say you did make it and you become this just huge superstar. You've sold your rights.
I sold my rights.
You get nothing.
I get nothing unless I want to go to the card shows and make money that way, right?
Yeah. Gotcha.
Which obviously never happened.
We are at a point in the game from yesterday where all you know what is breaking loose in the fourth.
Has the coach
come? He's thrown the his charts or whatever on the field. He has gone absolutely bonkers.
Well,
is that the pitching coach? So he gets tossed.
No, I think it's the first base coach.
It is the first base coach.
And you know why I thought of that? Because I was thinking of our interview with Tony Vitello just a couple weeks ago.
Where he said his first base coach was crazy. Yes.
Our first base coach is a nut job.
Yes, he did. Those were his exact words. Yep. Our first base coach, and we had fun and we laughed, but he said, my first base coach is a nut job.
Yeah. Well, he got all, he proved that to be true yesterday. He lost his mind.
Darren, I'm actually watching a live.
And if you can read lips, you might want to, you know, not have kids around.
We're not going to repeat. Yeah. So he throws. Here we go. get the walk first and second, and the third base ump is the one who throws him out. Which is strange.
That was weird.
Like the third base ump, and I realize he's got a direct view in the UT dugout, but he's the one who comes charging in like you're out. You're out of here. And
I still don't know how all that came to be, because that was really weird for that guy to be coming rolling in like he did. And Ben McDonald was all over him.
He was. He was basically saying, this crew is making it about them.
Right. He kind of said the crew, but I think he was really singling out the third base ump. He was kind of like, well, how does the third base ump come all the way over the first base dugout? That's a little too much. If it's the first base ump and the guys are chewing his ear off right there, or even the home plate ump, then that's one thing. But the guy from third base, I'm really not sure how that developed.
And Vitello was obviously very hot. And then, as you can imagine, which did not bode well for this crew, a lot of really close calls would ensue. By the way, they just tried the pickoff at second. If you've noticed, that was really, really close. They called him safe, and I didn't get a second look, but that was really close. And then we know the play at the plate that we talked about. I don't know. Boy, this is.
And you do wonder when they lost their cool, or if you believe, which I do, that it was a little bit half intentional. Tony Vitello, they're a little down, they're a little lifeless, right? They haven't played real well.
Yep.
I want to kind of send a jolt through my dugout, right? It's like you, Chase, said this earlier, like sometimes you want to get a tee in a college basketball game just to try to change the mood a little bit. Or in hockey, you send a guy out there and start something up, right? You drop the gloves, change the energy a little bit. I think that's Tony Vitello's thing sometimes. And so after all that happens, the play at the plate and the challenge at home plate is not far after this. It's a couple batters later. I wonder is there any effect on the replay psychology? It shouldn't be. But what dynamic is it that there's coaches thrown out, they don't like how we're calling things? I don't know. It's interesting. Crazy chain of events.
It's about to happen. Is it ultimately their call? There is.
That's
no
what
New
I don't
York.
Know. Is it the umps?
Is there Birmingham? Do they go to Birmingham?
I don't think it's Birmingham for the World Series. Where is it? Where is the central
Kansas
thing?
City?
I don't know.
They go to Kansas City.
But that's a good question. I'm guessing that the Situation Room, wherever it is, they make the final call. It's not the umps who have the headphones on, right? Because they're not looking at a monitor or anything.
I don't know. Yeah, I mean, somebody. Is it somebody on site? I don't know. Is there situational room on site?
There's got to be.
Yeah.
But it's not perfect, that's for sure. We saw that play yesterday. I thought the runner stepped on the foot of the catcher, and therefore he couldn't have touched home plate, but that's an assessment that you make, an assumption you make. You can't really see it for sure with the camera angle. So they stuck with the call on the field. I think that's a classic debate. I think if you had a room, you would have a majority of people that would say that should be overturned, but you might have a few people saying, well, the principle is it's got to be clear-cut, 100% evidence for us to overturn it. Remember Mike Slive years ago did that in the SEC when football replay was new in the SEC. And he said, I think we're going a little too far with the it's got to be 100% to overturn it. We got to use a little bit of common sense. But different people have different philosophies on that. Fair to say?
Yeah.
Can apply it to any sport.
Let's segue into what happened last night in Major League Baseball. Because there were some hotheads in Major League Baseball.
Oh, were there ever.
Last night as well. In fact, sometimes, or some of these games, I think they may have to put like a NC-17 rating on them if pitchers are going to keep
undressing. At least the PG-13.
At least PG-13. But I don't know. I mean, we start getting close to nudity. I think NC-17 may be – Sergio Romo was close to nudity. He took his pants off. Luckily, he had his long shirt hanging down. So – Romo was one example, but Max Scherzer was obviously the one that got everybody's attention last night. And of course, it was the game between the Nationals and the Phillies. Joe Girardi did not help things. His explanation after the game was, I've been watching Max Scherzer pitch for years and I've never seen him rub his head. And he was rubbing his head and his hair. And so that was suspicious to me. And so I don't know. And you've got one of his, I guess, former assistants in the other dugout. So I don't know what all was going on.
People challenging people to a fight.
Look, I don't blame Scherzer. I really don't, because it got ridiculous. It really did. I mean, this constant checking. Like baseball, this is what you've created. You always look the other way. You're never proactive. You're only reactive. You only react to what's being said. Or you get your hand forced.
Are you talking about the NCAA and MLB
all
in one?
Basically, yeah. Basically, they operate together. They do. They really do. And so it's like, you know, so now you're doing this in the middle of the season. You're not waiting until the off season. You're doing this in the middle of the season as we sit here in late June. And I don't blame Max Scherzer. I really don't. Like, whatever. I don't really have a strong opinion one way or the other on – you know, the sticky substance and, you know, all the stuff that's been going on. But I do know that if this is what it's going to be moving forward, I don't blame the pitchers for being like, really? You're just going to keep checking me? Every time I get a strikeout,
yes.
You're just going to keep checking me?
Yep. You have to. I'm on the side of it's got to be done. I agree with you 100% that they have not been proactive and they've had terrible communication, but it's got to a point where they have no other choice. You got to do something. Are we coming back to this on the other side, or are we?
Well, I mean, I just thought we could just talk about it right now. I mean, these were the two attention grabbers.
But remember,
this is
2 days of this. Those are the first two that have made the rounds on clips. You knew somebody was going to make a mockery of it. You know, most of the pitchers they understand why it's happening and they get checked and it's not camera worthy. This is happening multiple times in every single baseball game that's going on now.
I can't wait till Trevor Bauer gets, because I can only imagine what Trevor Bauer's going to do, because he's already got about six screws loose. So
a Bauer outage.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, there's no telling what he's going to do.
Well, this is what I wonder is, you know, in baseball circles, both teams know, and the umpires probably have a pretty good idea, who some of the people are that have taken big liberties. The rumors circle. People talk, right? And
by the way, I'm watching the play at the plate. He's out. I mean, he's absolutely out.
I think he's out. Yeah.
He's absolutely
I'm 95%
sure
his
foot is
out.
On the catcher's foot. He's not even touching home plate, and the glove is on his leg. He's out.
I'm watching the Phillies and the Nats. So.
Sorry, he's out.
You're watching last night's Phillies-Nats?
No, it's on
or the rematch today. So no shenanigans so far?
No. 5-2 Phillies.
Interesting. But you know what I mean? Like we know in announcer circles, right? You hear certain things about certain people, and you're like, ah, interesting. But you know, you keep it under your hat. You don't go public with it, or just like anything in life. I'm just throwing that as an example. People know who probably were the ones, some of the lead guys, in pushing the envelope with the spider tack and the really sticky stuff that takes it to another level, where it is really a clear, you become a different pitcher. And there are enough players that did want to put a stop to this, that this is what you get, right? Especially when you don't communicate and go over it in the off season, which is what should have happened, where you start fresh this year and you give people a full notion. But they had to go in cold turkey, partially because the game was getting unwatchable. And now it is clear that this is having an effect because the spin rates are down, and that was the design of this. So I really think it, better late than never is how I would look at it.
Yeah, but how long is it going to take for everybody to fall in line?
Well, I think the way I look at it is like, when you're driving, around your neighborhood, you know where the speed traps are. Like if you got a ticket, or a buddy of yours got a ticket for speeding along X road, you know, and you've been blowing by there every day, for, 15 miles over the speed limit, and then you finally get one, that's going to change your thinking, right? For a while, you're going to be like, oh, man, I just got a ticket here before. I think that's what they're trying to do. They're trying to say, listen, we don't want to make an entire spectacle of this, but we want to warn you, we're going to check you. So if you haven't been using this stuff, you got nothing to worry about, right?
Right.
But if you have, then you better deal with it. You better deal with it. You're gonna get checked. And where you put the substances to get to it during the game, it's got to be on your hat. It's got to be on your sleeve. They're just gonna check those things and make sure
it'd be a dodo brain
that you can't do it.
To get busted, right? I mean, honestly, you deserve to be suspended for the rest of the year and beyond if you get busted now. To me, it's not about right now because they're telling you, hey, we're coming. Hey, we're coming.
Ding,
put everything
ding,
away.
Ding,
hey,
ding.
We're coming. We're coming to your house. We're going to be knocking on the door. We're the police. We're coming to your house. But you've got time. Hide everything right now. But we are coming. We will be there in 2 minutes. That's what you're doing. To me, it's like, okay, then when everything settles down, then what? That's when you need to find out. When everything settles down and this gets calm, because right now, like I said, you'd have to be the biggest dodo brain in the world to go out there. You'd have to be the biggest dullard ever to go out there and get caught right now when they're telling you we're coming. But when everything quiets down, then what?
Right. But the question is, how many people for now, how many dozens of pitchers maybe, I don't know if it's, I would guess it's dozens, have seen the warning coming and said, okay, I got to stop. Even that alone tells you something, right?
Stop for now.
And then, okay, I heard a great interview on Buster Olney's podcast with Peter Moylan, the former Braves pitcher. He's Australian. Now he's with the broadcast team. He put it very plain and simple. He said something had to be done because there are pitchers that would not be the pitchers that they are without the stuff. And they have taken it to a new level. And then it becomes a cycle where, like steroids, hey, I don't like doing that stuff, but to keep up, I have to start using this because I might lose my job. Or you've got minor leaguers that have nothing to lose. They're going to get cut. Why not? I'll cheat. I'll put this stuff on there. I become a different pitcher. And so the cycle starts going, and more people jump in. More and more people start pushing the envelope. That's where they are today. And unfortunately, they have known this, and like steroids, they waited too long before they addressed it. But at least they're addressing it now. It's better now. They had to do something. So I'm for what they're doing.
We'll sneak in a phone call it a day, as you listen to Darren Donica Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. I want to let you know that the I-40 westbound, the lanes on that, and the Mount Juliet Road overpass, that whole area is expected to be closed for weeks. There's a really bad tractor-trailer crash that caused extensive damage to the bridge columns. So just keep that in mind if you're familiar with that area. I-40 westbound lanes and the Mount Juliet Road overpass.
Does that mean like you literally cannot go? Do you have to to get off the highway and go around it?
Yes.
Okay. That's not good.
It's going to be significant repair for the next couple of weeks.
Start getting your ways out, I guess, and figure out how to get around it. Wow.
That's right. Just wanted to pass that along. Let's go to C&B, Checks and Balances, wants to weigh in on the Vols.
Well, first, speaking of the I-40 thing, that sounds like the Memphis Bridge right now, where you can't cross over the water into Arkansas.
Oh, really? Are they doing repairs?
Yeah, there's a crack in the bridge.
Oh, yeah, that's a problem.
Yeah, they found it and had to divert everybody. Anyways, my thing with the assistant coach getting tossed is what is and isn't constituted as arguing balls and strikes. That's why I feel like he got tossed, because ball four came, he wasn't happy, he slammed the clipboard down, the ump from third base basically charged halfway over and tossed him. Do you think that, you know, emotions in the dugout should be considered arguing balls and strikes or whatever? Because
did he physically come out of the dugout? When did he throw the clipboard?
Ball four. Threw it out. Well, he slammed it on the railing, and then I think he threw it out on the outside the dugout.
But when did he throw it? Right then?
Think when he came out, yeah. And he came out, and he charged out, and he was given.
At that point, was he already thrown out of the game?
I don't see the timeline in front of me.
Well, I was watching even the replay. It wasn't 100%. I don't think they knew exactly.
Well, here's something else we don't know if he used some magic words.
Oh, well, he used a lot of magic words, but I don't know when, right? They showed him he is screaming a lot of expletives and using more than one of the magic words.
Yeah, he didn't say fudge.
He definitely was, but based on the, like y'all were saying before, based on the announcers, it seems like he got tossed because of the because of throwing the clipboard.
Right. See, that's what I don't know. I think he had already been tossed when he started using the magic words.
I think he was
thrown out for throwing the clipboard. But this
That's pretty weak if they did, because all he did was slam it on the railing.
The rule of thumb for most teams is that the assistant coach cannot be the one arguing. It's got to be the head coach.
Yeah.
The assistant coach cannot make a spectacle. And umpires are not going to tolerate that from an assistant coach.
I will just tell you that.
They'll give the head coach a little leeway.
That is an every level thing.
Yeah.
I've been told that many times by home plate umpires. I want to hear from you. I don't want to hear from any of your coaches. And I tell that to my coaches. Like, look, no matter what you how you feel about something, they are not going to tolerate you saying anything to them. So I will have to address it. So that's pretty much every level. And so that's not any different at the college level.
And I'm not sure Vitello fully understood. He's talking to the home plate umpire going, what did he do? And they're both two umpires are pointing right at the first base coach saying, it was that guy.
Well, I'm not sure Tony Vitello was saying, what did he do?
What did he say?
Tony Vitello was very animated as well several times.
Well, he had already gone out to argue about the catcher's interference, which was not.
Well, don't forget, when he came out to pull his pitcher, too, he had some very, very kind words, or maybe not so kind words, to the first base ump as well.
Yes, he did.
A lot of energy.
A lot of emotion.
Energy is one way of putting it.
Somewhere, one way to put it.
How about some...
By the way, during this conversation, when I turned this Phillies-Nats game on, it was 5-0 Phillies. It's 5-all now in the top of the fifth.
Nats are playing pretty well right now.
So there you go.
We'll see if there's any incidents tonight. Remember, NC-17. We'll go on the premise tonight of NC-17 for all Major League
Baseball
games.
Nobody has been ejected from a game yet, though, for using the substances.
But it could change tomorrow. But for right now, tonight's games are NC. So you'll have to have an adult with you if you're going to watch.
Okay? That's a bummer.
Yeah. Well, not for us. But
no, we're good.
When I was a kid, I would not have accepted that. I would have tested the rule. I would have said, I'm watching, man. I'm getting into this theater.
You're a rebel.
Yeah.
All right, that will do it for our show. Enjoy the rest of this gorgeous Wednesday. We look forward to talking to you tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. We'll see you then.